T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Breaking news from News Talk A30 WCCO.
Good morning, clear sky, 63 degrees at 5:05. I'm Steve Simpson. Minneapolis is burning at this hour. At least out around the 3rd Precinct, a number of buildings remain on fire. At least one person is dead. It's been a night of riots and protests. We begin our coverage with Mark Fry.
Violent protests escalated overnight in South Minneapolis near the scene of George Floyd's death. Protesters near the 3rd Precinct looted nearby businesses, including Cub Foods and Target, while setting fires elsewhere. Minneapolis police spokesman John Eller called the scene heartbreaking.
Just widespread civil disobedience, and it's unfortunate. It's sad. If people are there, truly there, to honor the memory of the decedent and the family, this isn't how you do it. People are utilizing this as a purpose to just be make bad decisions.
As many in the black community continue to demand a total of 4 officer arrests in George Floyd's death, supporters now arrive from around the country.
I've been on the plane since 6 a.m. I came from Las Vegas. First thing I want to do is salute y'all, because y'all did wake us up. Y'all woke everybody up, and we're not the only ones back. We are not the only ones back. It's with our ancestors. And they bring the fire out of us. They bring the fire out of us, because like they said, it's been our grandparents, our great-grandparents. How much time do they want?
There are also supporters who have come from other countries and say that racism and police brutality in their home countries is not the norm.
I was born in Liberia, but since I came here, I've learned a lot of things being in the U.S. about race, about how white people treat other black people. Like in my country, we don't know that. They don't teach us that in my country. So to come here and learn that, it really made me feel bad. And sometimes it made me feel like I want to go back home.
The crowd outside the Minneapolis Police Union headquarters continues to swell, with demonstrators calling for the resignation of union head Lieutenant Bob Kroll in the wake of the George Floyd killing. WCCO Sloan Martin has been there all afternoon and joins us live with the latest. Sloan.
After about 2 hours of a peaceful rally with impassioned speeches, we're close to wrapping up around a 2-mile march. And it was really something to see, Laura, to see people out on their front porches, their balconies, in front of their small businesses here in a residential neighborhood along University Ave in Northeast Minneapolis, stand outside with their fists up.
Hey, I'm with CCO Radio. Just your thoughts on what happened here today.
You know, I appreciate the peaceful protest. This is part of what democracy looks like. You know, and although there are many people that are upset, this is part of my job to hear it and to lean into it. So, you know, I am absolutely for a massive shift, a structural shift in how the police department functions. I'll say it again. Am I for abolishing the entire police department? No, I'm not, and I'll be honest about that too.
What were you trying to do today? What was your goal? To get up and speak?
No, my goal was just to be with community. They asked me to come up there, and so I did. You know, these are the tough situations where you need to lean into, as difficult as they may be. I'm here doing exactly that.
The hostility, you can feel it, can't you?
I can. I understand the anger. I understand the sadness. You know, I'm mayor.
What's the extent of the damage? You know, pretty extensive. Unfortunately, they got into the building, obviously lit it on fire. Thank God it didn't spread throughout the entire complex, but there's just and just completely ransacked the entire building. Got upstairs, downstairs, office, computers, TVs, liquor. I think they might have just pulled up here with their cars and unloaded the business. So it's disheartening, sad.
In the parking lot of Speedway, as music plays and meat is pulled off the grill, dancing can be seen and singing heard. DJ Soda of Twin Cities Stand Together charity group states that no longer should members of black communities be figuring out ways to get out of the hood, but how to make the hood a place they will want to stay.
This is my community. I grew up in this community. My mother and my grandmother all grew up in this community. This right here is what we look like. You know, when this all first started, there was a lot of media coverage or lack thereof of who our people really are. And we made it a point to show our community we can come together. We can take care of each other. We don't need outside people to take care of us. We just got to stand up and start looking out for each other, you know, feeding each other. When somebody needs something, getting it for them. When people need their rent paid, pay it. You know?
In South Minneapolis, Brandon Eisen, News Talk 830 WCCO.
There was no official announcement, just a banner on their shop at 35th in Chicago, three blocks north of where Floyd died.
We thought it would be better to kind of do attraction rather than promotion. And so we just put up big banners. And as soon as we put a banner up, a car was driving by and it skidded to a halt. And five kids ran out and we got them and their whole family bikes. And they were able to kind of like cruise around and go check out the protest. And yeah, in the next 2.5 hours, we got rid of all of our bikes.
Tyler Geisen is with Full Cycle, a donation-based nonprofit supporting youth who've experienced housing instability with outreach and food access. Usually they give out between 5 and 10 bikes every week to youths and help deliver 200 meals a day to different shelters and programs. The Free Bikes for Protesters initiative rolled out today. Within 3 hours, all 20 bikes were gone. During our interview, even someone walked up looking to get one, only to be told to come back in a few days.
A tense scene here outside the 5th Precinct in Minneapolis, where protesters, after having marched earlier in the night, have gathered here. They were earlier at the site of the George Floyd Memorial at 38th in Chicago, marched downtown, and then a group here is gathered at the intersection of 31st. Right now, what I see is a number of law enforcement in riot gear just to my left, standing by, as this group appears to be taunting them at this time. So far, no tear gas has been fired, but it's certainly a tense situation.
This is cause for concern, but not panic.
The older adult Ramsey County resident was recently on a cruise alongside a known COVID-19 case. The unidentified person started showing symptoms February 25th and went to the doctor yesterday. That person is at home recovering in quarantine. Health officials are reaching out to people who may have come into contact with them. Commissioner Jan Malcolm.
Our preliminary understanding is that the person largely has been at home and just sought care, as I said yesterday. So as far as we know, this is a person who's really not been out and about much. But as I said, we're very new in this investigation. These people who may have been in contact with the person will be asked to quarantine themselves for 14 days from the date of their exposure, and will be monitored for fever and respiratory symptoms.
With an increase in cases in other states, officials knew it was only a matter of time before Minnesota saw its first.
This is a travel-related case of exposure. This is not a case of community exposure of unknown origin. That is a critical distinction.
Governor Tim Walz.
As with other outbreaks, some people will get the illness and some will not. The great majority of people who get COVID-19 will have mild symptoms and may require little, if any, medical care. Some people will have moderate to severe illnesses, and some will require extensive medical care. The risk of severe illness seems to be lower amongst healthy adults and younger adults and children, and higher for elderly and people with underlying medical conditions.
Minnesota has not reached the point of community mitigation, such as temporarily closing schools, shutting down large events, or affecting public transit. They're continuing to monitor the situation. Sloan Martin, News Talk 830, WCCO.
Dr. Michael Osterholm, the director of the University of Minnesota Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy. Mike, good morning.
Good morning to you, David.
Dr. Osterholm, let's talk about that, where we are today and what you expect in the coming weeks.
Well, as we have talked many times on this show, I mean, this is a truly a marathon, not a sprint. We're in a situation where I can see this lasting for a number of months with these rolling major epidemics hitting different cities at different times. Right now, New York, clearly New Orleans, Seattle, Detroit, Chicago are really starting to take off. But we're seeing it throughout the United States. But in those areas in particular, it's really moving quickly. It'll just be a matter of time before it really spreads across the United States, including many rural areas.
About 30 minutes ago on Twitter, our friend and guest, Blois Olson from Morning Take, put out a tweet saying that when the governor conducts his daily teleconference, which you'll hear again on WCCO right around 2 o'clock, that he will enact a form of shelter in place. The governor's talked about this before, where one day he was saying it wasn't the time to close restaurants and bars, and then new data came in. Wasn't the right time to close schools, then new data came in. Yesterday, in the teleconference, he talked about the modeling from the University of Minnesota. He talked about where he felt at the time. Something obviously changed from what you know. What did?
I do expect that we will hear more details on the modeling.
Okay.
But if you look at every other state, we seem to date, by both the government data and some other data, we seem to have flattened so far because we were about a week to 2 weeks ahead in some key pieces. One was we locked down nursing homes about a week and a half before other states. We were extra careful on prisons and kind of those jails and those kind of places before the other states. And I'm watching Wisconsin very carefully. Mm-hmm. And if you parallel the two states, they are totally night and day right now. Wisconsin is probably 6 to 10 to 12 days away from hitting a pretty tough peak of stress on their hospitals. And we're still not there. So I think the modeling told him something. I think that he's starting to see and wanted to have some key things in place, including, by the way, I think he wanted the legislature to be able to meet and approve some budget dollars, which is going to happen now tomorrow.
Mayor Fry was forceful in his demeanor, saying he expects 100% compliance.
If a city official is not around to tell you to go home, to stop congregating, you better be damn sure that we will have mothers around the city that will not tolerate selfishness. And if necessary, I will issue an emergency regulations, will issue fines, and pursue other means of enforcement as well.
Fry says he also realizes many of us are feeling the pull to get outside. He says while the Park Board has already announced it's closing down car traffic along the Mississippi River downtown to allow more room for walkers and runners, they'll be doing the same around Lake Harriet and Lake Nokomis in the coming days. Meanwhile, Police Chief Madaria Arredondo says officers have strict orders on how to respond to calls during this time.
When we hear of calls that might be in violation of the governor's executive order, we will go out there to advise and educate. If the conduct continues, then we will take enforcement actions. But rest assured, this pandemic does not mean in any way, shape, or form that we will start utilizing broad sweeping arrest powers. We will not be questioning or demanding papers from those in our new immigrant community or undocumented community.
The statewide stay-at-home order goes into effect at 11:59 p.m. tonight. Laura Oakes, News Talk 830 WCCO.
Wall says this next round is not like flipping a light switch. It's a way to piece by piece turn on parts of the economy in a way that does not jeopardize the progress Minnesotans have made by physical distancing.
We cannot rest easy. This thing can explode overnight if you don't take the proper precautions. And I'm not saying New York didn't take the proper precautions. The problem is that many days back, no one knew how quickly this was going to go. No one had the social distancing in place long enough. So the move to go to social distancing, the move to go early, has kept us relatively flat.
Exemptions will be added in the coming weeks as agencies develop protocols, like for landscapers, golf course maintenance workers, or small business owners who need to stop in to manage inventory. Critical workers will continue their routines. Restaurants will continue to be closed for dine-in. Wall says he does not want to follow states like Michigan or Louisiana that statistically looked under control and then quickly devolved.
The news today is the extension of the stay-at-home order till May 4th. The bars and restaurants till May 4th, schooling till that point, with some changes to this and an expectation as more capacity to test comes online and more ability to social distance at workplaces that can start up again. We want to see that happen.
Indoor capacity has been boosted to 50%, with 10 people now allowed to be seated at indoor dining tables and 4 at bar tables. The relaxed restrictions are intended to alleviate a drop in business when patio season ends and to accommodate larger groups during the holidays. Minneapolis St. Paul Magazine food writer Dara Moskowitz-Grumdahl says despite the progress, restaurant owners are still in a tough spot.
They can't raise prices because people are so sensitive to the prices. They, you know, don't have anywhere to get money from in all of this. It's fantastic that capacity is going up to 50%. 50% is not what you built your whole restaurant model on.
Officials with the trade group Hospitality Minnesota say more than 50 restaurants in the state, primarily in the metro, have closed due to the pandemic. Laura Oakes, News Talk 830 WCCO.
As the largest and densest city in the state of Minnesota, we have a responsibility to resist fatigue, to resist complacency that have ultimately brought to COVID-19 spikes nationwide. We are not presently seeing the same numbers that Arizona and Florida are seeing. We are not seeing those yet, but we cannot wait until it is too late to act. So from early physical distancing to mask requirements, our city has really led in a big way on the COVID-19 actions and set a standard as this crisis has unfolded, and it is clear that we have to do so again. And so today, I am issuing emergency regulation closing indoor bar areas for regular service in the city of Minneapolis effective 5 p.m. on August 1st. The closure also covers tap rooms, distilleries, nightclubs, and requires that restaurants with a bar area that keep that bar closed to service for the duration of the emergency regulation.
In the Black community, a barbershop is not a transactional marketplace. People come for community. Houston White, owner of H. White Men's Room in Minneapolis, grappled with how and when to open his business in order to sustain it. He said mask wearing is part of the inconvenience of adjusting to this pandemic, but it's a small yet important change.
I understand. I get it. You know, every time I go to my aunt's house, I can't run up and hug her like I used to. I can't do some of the things that I used to do. And I get it. We all are going through a lot of that. But in this moment, I think we have to think about the collective consciousness, the collective health of us all.
In the South Metro, Sloan Martin, News Talk 830, WCCO.
COVID-19's impact isn't foreign to children and teens across the United States, especially here in Minnesota. Dr. Gigi Chawla is the chief of general pediatrics at Children's Minnesota and says more and more kids are testing positive for COVID-19 statewide.
And in our hospitals, we're admitting many more children who are also positive and needing our hospitalization type support.
While symptoms in children typically remain minimal, Dr. Chawla reiterates that COVID's health impact changes with age.
Our teenage population, our young adult population, they are going to experience more symptoms, whether it's fatigue or some respiratory symptoms.
With increased infections impacting both young and old, physicians worry about the upcoming holiday season and the traditions that come with it. This year, some of those traditions, especially ones that kids look forward to the most, may have to be cast aside.
Just trying to, you know, imagine lines of people, lines of kids in place for sitting on a Santa's lap in a mall sounds just completely crazy at this point.
Jill Renslow at the Mall of America says Santa is still coming to the mall this year, but you're going to have to make an appointment.
Santa will be set up in his workshop in a little cabin type setting. So families will be able to interact with Santa, but it'll be a safe photo type of opportunity with Santa in person. You can also connect with Santa virtually from your home.
Mark Fry, News Talk 830 WCCO.
It hits both farmers and customers who will likely see higher prices and animals euthanized.
For now, our food supply is stable. Our consumers will see some disruptions as they have, and they may see some higher prices that it'll become more pronounced depending on how long we're in the situation with COVID-19.
Department of Agriculture Commissioner Tom Peterson says it is stable right now because of what's in storage, but there's no doubt that the region's closure of multiple plants will have ripple effects. He adds that eating habits, eating from home, are also making an impact and the systems need to catch up. In the South Metro, Sloan Martin, News Talk 830, WCCO.
Mental health experts are warning that the holidays will likely be the toughest part of 2020. A recent survey revealed that loneliness in the U.S. is higher than ever before.
There's been, of course, a systemic problem with loneliness before even, and this was compounded by COVID-19, by the pandemic, because of rules and regulations that were absolutely crucial for in reducing the infection rate.
Dr. Sabina Schmidt is an assistant professor of psychiatry in the University of Minnesota Medical School and says that the holidays are historically a difficult time for mental health.
They bring out emotions and issues. I think they confront us with issues that are probably already there, right?
Dr. Schmidt, who is also a clinical psychologist with mHealth Fairview, says it's important for people to do an honest evaluation with themselves, especially if they have lingering feelings of loneliness. Mark Fry, News Talk 830 WCCO.
Heidi Prail is a nurse in the intensive care unit at Hennepin Healthcare, where she has seen more pain and suffering than she could ever have imagined. She remembers when it all started.
When it first started coming, it wasn't as bad. Then we had that first surge, and we actually had to open an overflow unit. It was bad. I mean, we simply didn't have, so we had to try to, as safely as we could, take care of the patients with what staff we had. It was very difficult.
Now she says death seems to be settling in.
That's a lot of work just to take care of one person.
Throughout these past several months, she has watched as patients have died alone, their final moments shared with loved ones over a tablet.
The sad part is that's when you really start to understand who the person in that bed is, because somebody is saying their goodbye to them, you know, letting all their memories go. Absolutely heartbreaking. Nobody wants to be in there for that.
She remembers how emotional it was for her the first time she witnessed it.
It was heartbreaking. I was in tears.
The patients, she says, are on ventilators, heart-lung machines, and in need of constant supervision with so much to do to try to prevent the patients from dying. It's exhausting, she says, and maddening when she sees people disregard guidelines to stop the spread.
And even when they hear the stories, you know, I feel like some people are just like, you're just fear-mongering. It's like, no, we're not. It's just sad.
She loves her job in spite of all of it and feels good about the protections they are getting at the hospital.
People always ask, are you scared to go to work? It's like, no, I would rather be in this building where it seems to be a more controlled environment than out where people are, you know, doing whatever they want. You know, you have a certain number that follow the rules and, of course, the other faction of them that do not.
Susie Jones, News Talk 830 WCCO.
And I would not want to put any of those families, any of those students, in harm's way. And that's why we're here today.
Teachers rallying at J.J. Hill School before marching to the governor's residence said not only do they fear for the health and safety of their students' families, and their own, they do not feel prepared for whatever reopening schools may look like. Greta Callahan is a kindergarten teacher and president of the Minneapolis Teachers Union.
Because guess what? We don't want to teach over Zoom. We can't wait to be back to in-person learning, but our students' lives are too important to be sacrificed so that the economy can reopen.
They're calling for hiring more staff and investing in cleaning and capital improvements. But teachers also criticize the highest levels of the Education Department in Washington for failing to listen to teachers and staff, connecting this latest situation to a longtime fight for resources in schools.
We demand that the federal government release our funding to better prepare and support our students, families, and staff. If you don't want to leave, then give us the resources and get the hell out of the way.
CDC guidance released Thursday called for students to return to school, citing their emotional well-being and academic progress, unless there is a high rate of cases in the community. A survey from Education Minnesota, the state teachers union, released yesterday from 20,000 members, found 17% want to return to in-person teaching, while just under 30% support a hybrid with distance learning. In the South Metro, Sloan Martin, News Talk 830, WCCO.
Back then, keeping true to what the building at the corner of 7th Street and 1st Avenue used to be, it was the Depot. And the first guest?
Joe Cocker kicked it all off on this night 50 years ago, along with an entourage of 40 and a dog. From there, the place continued to book some of the biggest acts in the country, from Tina Turner to the Flying Burrito Brothers to the Kinks. Then it ran out of money, shut down for a while, and reopened as Uncle Sam's just in time for the disco craze. Chris Riemenschneider spent years researching the place, its quirks, its stories that need to remain untold, and the decade that kind of defined First Avenue. We chatted for a long time amid the field trips outside of the Minnesota History Center exhibit based on his book.
Let's go to the 80s now. This is kind of when Prince started becoming a household name, and that was Prince's house. So tell me about his big impact.
Yeah, Prince had played a couple shows in Minneapolis before then. He did his Capri Theater shows, and he had done the Orpheum as well. And just never quite, his live act was still being worked out, and it never quite gelled. October 1981, it's still called Uncle Sam's at that point. And he has just put out the Dirty Mind album, and he's blowing up. He's booked on Saturday Night Live, and right after Saturday Night Live, he is playing First Avenue. So it was just lightning kind of moment of perfect time, perfect place. All these shows are all the Prince shows. Most of them, there's bootlegs of them. Pretty hard to find because Prince kept a tight lid on all that, but. I mean, they really were amazing shows and meaningful shows, too. It wasn't just there were only a few occasions where he, was kind of a hits kind of show. It was really him kind of experimenting at a lot of these, trying new stuff out with the hometown crowd and with the club he knew so well.
Under normal circumstances, large crowds would be turning out the second weekend of September for music, food, vendors, and community. This year, there are four headliners each Saturday this month, all virtual, including September 26th with famed pianist Nachito Herrera, who survived a case of COVID that left him in a coma for 14 days. It's his first appearance since his illness. Michael Wright is the executive director of the Selby Avenue Jazz Fest and owner of Golden Time Coffee and Cafe.
Well, we just hope that, people will tune in. And the main thing is that we didn't want people to think that we forgot them or that, we had an opportunity to work through this and we grabbed it. And so people can understand we're still there. We're still working on things. And hopefully we can bring you, I won't say a better Jazz Fest, but a Jazz Fest that is was far removed in 2020.
When Rose McGee saw the pain and agony in Ferguson following the shooting death of Michael Brown by police, she felt called to help, and she started by baking a pie.
Well, for me, it's not just any pie. It's the sweet potato pie. And the sweet potato pie, in my opinion, is the sacred dessert of Black culture. That's just how I feel about it. And it's a complex dessert.
She made the pies and drove them down, and since then has founded the nonprofit Rose McGee Sweet Potato Comfort Pies.
For me, the work that we do with Sweet Potato Comfort Pie is to really help people to understand how to connect, understand the connecting factors, and to understand how to listen to each other.
She says their annual event to honor Dr. Martin Luther King gathers hundreds of people.
Folks come in and they're ready to look around and where are the recipes? We're just going to dump pour mix. And they kind of get a thrill out of that.
Rose says she learned that through the process of baking with others, delivering the pies, and then gathering for reflection, the pies became more than just comfort food and culture. They were actually a catalyst for change.
There's no real recipe for it. We just kind of have to pitch in there and figure out what works best for the situation.
And after the death of George Floyd, she says she wanted to bake pies to help with the healing process. So she started a series of virtual events called We Can't Breathe. The first one included mothers of children who've been killed by police. The next one will feature a generational conversation about race with people from Mankato, St. Cloud, Rochester, and Duluth gathering online to talk about the struggle. And at the same time, they will make sweet potato pie. In the West Metro, Susie Jones, News Talk 830 WCCO.
The plywood sign sits on rural Gunflint Trail in northern Cook County, painted black with white lettering with the three words, Black Lives Matter. It first drew attention about 3 weeks ago when Big Bear Lodge owner Andy DeLisi posted stills from video footage of an older couple messing with it on his Facebook page. He later found the sign in a ditch. After the post went viral, the cosmetics company Mary Kay said in a statement it had severed ties with Linda Bergerson of Cedar Rapids. DeLisi has reported two more incidents to the Cook County Sheriff's Office since. The first, July 31st, showed a man heaving the sign away from the road. The latest 2 days ago featured a man in a truck with a camper attached running into it, which DeLisi believes was intentional. The Army veteran says since he's not able to take part in protests in person in the area so rural cell phones don't function, he's not taking it down.
I just feel that this racial injustice thing has been going on far too long. And frankly, I'm late to the dance. You know, we should be a bit more vocal about this years and years and years ago.
DeLisi says it's his First Amendment right, and he's not concerned about it affecting business.
This just fortifies our position even more so.
It will be a whirlwind day for the senator as she is now back in Washington, D.C. for the impeachment hearings, and then she's planning to fly back to Iowa at night for a celebration party for what she hopes will be a better-than-expected finish. She says she has what other candidates don't.
I'm someone that's won with moderate Republicans and independents in the reddest of red congressional districts.
She has already said she'll fly next to New Hampshire to take part in that state's primary. Susie Jones, News Talk 830 WCCO.
In 2018, it was the closest U.S. House race. Incumbent Representative Jim Hagedorn and DFL challenger Dan Feehan are back for a rematch. Hagedorn succeeded Tim Walz after he ran for governor, turning the district red for the first time since 2006. Feehan came up just 1,300 votes short 2 years ago, less than a half a percentage point margin. In the election before that, Walz narrowly beat Hagedorn by just 3,500 votes. It's expected to be close for the third election cycle in a row. University of Minnesota political scientist Larry Jacobs.
There's no doubt there are going to be Trump voters all over Minnesota, including the first, that will stick with the president, stick with Republicans. But when you've got, you know, that 5 to 10% who are undecided, where you've got some of those Democrats who turn out for some elections but not others, this kind of environment that are so polarized in which there's so much intensity will have a tilt that favors the Democrats. And given how close the 2018 race is, it may just be enough to tip the race away from Hagedorn.
100 years ago, 90 women in South St. Paul were among the first in the nation to cast their vote after the passage of the 19th Amendment. A moment in history that feels very personal to Anne Claflin.
Finding out that the women who probably cast that first vote following the ratification of the 19th Amendment lived in the house where I grew up was an incredible connection.
100 years ago, 90 women in South St. Paul were among the first in the nation to cast their vote after the passage of the 19th Amendment. It's a moment in history that feels very personal to Anne Claflin.
Finding out that the women who probably cast that first vote following the ratification of the 19th Amendment lived in the house where I grew up was an incredible connection to the past.
She went on to run for state office in St. Paul, where she now serves as the first woman to hold the seat that represents District 54A. She's one of many suburban women who have made it their mission to get more involved in the political process, thus becoming more critical in the outcome of the election. As far as how they'll vote, well, in every presidential election since 1980, women have been more likely than men to vote for the Democratic candidate. But that doesn't necessarily mean that suburban women will vote for that same candidate.
We know that a majority of suburban women, in fact, in 2016, voted for Donald Trump. But the polls thus far indicate a pretty dramatic swing among suburban women in favor of Joe Biden.
University of Minnesota political science professor Catherine Pearson says suburban women voters are increasingly diverse.
Suburban women, of course, include white women, women of color, married women, single women, as suburbs in America are increasingly diverse.
Susie Jones, News Talk, 830 WCCO.
More than 100 people left Clark Field and marched north on Rice Street, all the way to the place where Nia Black was shot to death nearly 2 months ago. Nia's mother, LaTanya.
As a mother, I'm not supposed to be doing this.
I am not supposed to be doing this. I was prepared for me, but I'm just so thankful that everybody's here, and we're gonna get justice for her.
Police say there were more than 50 people there when Neil was shot, many with cameras. Mayor Melvin Carter walked with the group and says even a little bit of information about the shooting will help bring justice for Nia. In St. Paul's North End, Al Schock, Newstalk A3O, WCCO.
Physically, some kids are limited in ability, but the desire, the dedication, the total unselfishness is not limited. This is a local story that comes from Maple Grove High School. Mark Cook is the accomplished girls basketball 15-year head coach for the Crimson. And this year, he left a mark on the program, and not just for wins and losses.
The Dalton family, who are just an amazing family, came to me 4 years ago. I had their son in class, and they came to me 4 years ago and asked. They have a daughter who has Down syndrome, and Emma loves basketball. She's passionate about basketball. She's been playing basketball since she was in first grade. And so they came to me and they said, you know what, she just wants to be around the program. She just wants to be around it any way she can. Can she come be a team manager? And I'm like, absolutely.
And now, in what seems an all of a sudden moment, she's a senior. And the last regular season game became something unforgettable for her.
This year, with it being her senior year, we wanted to do something special for her on senior night. And so, the team was very adamant about, we got to do something special for Emma. And so I talked with some of my assistants, and I went to the kids and I said, well, you know, what do you guys think about maybe dressing, seeing if Emma wants to dress for this game on senior night and give her a uniform and have her come out and warm up with the team and be introduced as a starter and, all that fun stuff. And the kids were just super excited about it.
On his roster, there's only one senior player, and Coach Cook wanted her response first.
And we only have one senior player this year. So it was, I had a talk with Abby about it, and, you know, because it was kind of senior night, it was kind of her night, and I said, and she's like, oh, that would be the greatest. She was so excited, and they came down with me to Emma's room last Friday and presented Emma. Abby got to ask Emma if Emma would be willing to dress, and Emma was so excited about it, and a little nervous, a little apprehensive, but they got home, and Mom and Dad were so over the moon. Mom and Dad are just the most amazing people and so supportive, and so it kind of came to fruition, and she came into the locker room with us before the game in her uniform and got to run out on the floor and dress and be a part of the warm-ups and be a part of introductions and sit on the bench, not down by the water where she normally likes to sit, but right in the middle of the bench, right in the thick things, and it was a really, really special night. And I'll tell you what, I'm watching the team come together and embrace her and just make this a special night for her was really, really cool.
WCCO's Mike Max talked with Coach Cook about this on his Sports to the Max show.
I saw a piece of video on her and where she got home and she modeled the uniform for her parents. And I mean, if you can keep a dry eye through that.
And Coach Cook did not know about the video at the time.
I didn't realize that when we had gone in the classroom, that Abby Schulte, who was our senior player, was actually videoing the presentation of the jersey. And so she sent it to me and was like, put this on Twitter. And so we put it on Twitter. And it got viewed 32,000 times on Twitter.
Wow.
I think that speaks to, people like these kind of, there's a lot of negativity in the world.
Yep, there's a lot of good hearts.
And there's a lot of good hearts, and there's a lot of great stories out there that sometimes, unfortunately, go under the radar. And so this was something that I think, people are excited about. And the outpouring of support that we received as a program, that the girls received was just incredible. And I'm just really lucky to be a small part of it.
Coach Cook and his Maple Grove Crimson girls basketball team, it's about more than what we see on the court and the game nights. Their identity is obviously in their culture, and it's at the highest level.
It brings you back to why we do what we do as a teacher and as a coach, and the opportunity to work with amazing kids and all kinds of different kids and all kinds of different experiences and all kinds of different situations.
One of the highlights of this past season of this year in Minnesota girls basketball, which finishes its season this weekend with the Minnesota State High School girls basketball state tournament. Along with Mike Max, Dave Lee, WCCO.
Number 30, Emma Dalton.
Thermo King is a Bloomington-based company specializing in cold storage, critical in the distribution of the COVID-19 vaccine, which has to be kept at very cold temperatures. Dwayne Cowan is vice president of sales.
It's a very complicated process right now with many different players. So you can see the pharmaceutical companies, governments, logistic companies, transportation, and others that are involved in this supply chain. And our role is to safeguard that vaccine throughout the cold chain, so it arrives safely across the world. So, and we do this by using our precise temperature control equipment but also tracking that technology.
Thermo King is one of hundreds of Minnesota companies playing a vital role in the fight against COVID-19. Shay Mandel is president of the Medical Alley Association in Minnesota.
But I think everybody around the world right now sees 3M front and center, Ecolab, the Mayo Clinic, Medtronic, and, you know, they're organizations that are leading the critical areas that are a part of managing and, you know, the pandemic.
But he says they have more than 600 members. Many of them are smaller, but still part of the response. For example,
there's a company in Plymouth, Nonin Medical. They make pulse oximeters, you know, tabletop and the things that go on your fingers. And obviously, as COVID started, I mean, they had increased orders of 3,000%, and they met that need, right, to make sure that bedside and all the increase in ICU use, that people had the basic things they needed on the corner of their desk.
Wrapping up this series of reports, it's been remarkable to me the amount of pride that employees have being part of the life-saving effort. So many working 24/7 to come up with testing, treatment, and ultimately vaccinating everyone so we can hopefully and finally put an end to the pandemic. Again, Dr. Jacob Toler, Dean of the University of Minnesota Medical School.
It's a moral pursuit in search and quest of common good.
Susie Jones, News Talk 830 WCCO.
With the news, newsmakers, weather, traffic, business, and sports happening now, this is Minnesota's Drive Time News with Adam Carter and Laura Oakes.
At 6:08, News Talk 830 WCCO, Governor Tim Walz announcing a two-week stay-at-home executive order for those not in critical jobs. That starts Friday at midnight through April 10th.
This means you can still go to the grocery store, to medical appointments, get carryout from a restaurant, and be outside in uncrowded areas. It means you cannot go to work unless it is a critical service or gather in groups. Based on modeling data from the Department of Health and the U of M, Wall says if the virus runs its course without mitigation, Minnesota ICU beds and ventilators will be overrun and lead to more deaths. He explained the first scenario without mitigation, with the numbers estimating 74,000 deaths overall and 6,000 people in intensive care by the end of April. There are currently 243 ICU beds in the entire state. Reaching ICU capacity could be 6 weeks under the first no mitigation scenario. A stay-at-home executive order will move out the time for the peak of the pandemic.
The attempt here is to strike a proper balance of making sure that our economy can function, we protect the most vulnerable, we slow the rate to buy us time and build out our capacity to deal with this. Because if you get sick, and if you need hospitalization, and if you need an ICU, and if that ICU is available with a ventilator and all of the things you need, you have a 10 times greater chance of surviving this.
Walz says coronavirus will peak in Minnesota on day 150, which from this point is about mid-August. According to Walz's data, 85% of people who get it will have mild symptoms and recover. 15% will require hospitalization, and 5% would require intensive care. Essential workers will continue their jobs, but the message remains to limit movement outside the home.
This does not mean you don't step out of your house. This does not mean that you can't do some of the things that keep life functioning on. But it does mean that we're getting more restrictive to get us to that 80%, which bends that curve to the right.
There were currently 287 lab-confirmed cases in Minnesota. 26 people are hospitalized and 12 are in intensive care. Officials say the official number is an undercount due to shortages in testing supplies. On WCCORadio.com, we have where you can find out if your job or business is considered critical. The Department of Employment and Economic Development says more than three quarters of Minnesota jobs are in critical industries like healthcare, childcare, food and agriculture, utilities, and more. 28% of Minnesotans are expected to be jobless for at least these 2 weeks, according to Deed. 164,000 people as of today have applied for unemployment. Bars and restaurants will continue to be closed through May 1st, but are still available for carryout under this new executive order. Liquor stores will be open. Sloan Martin, Newstalk 830, WCCO.
Senate Republicans already pushing back. Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka said in his statement he has grave concerns about Governor Walz's executive order. Senate Republicans will have more to say in a news conference late tomorrow morning. Well, with the stay-at-home order coming, another plea from those essential stores that will be staying open: do not rush out to panic buy.
Under the stay-at-home order, grocery stores will remain open with enough food and toilet paper for everyone. Still, some people at this Costco in St. Louis Park are feeling a bit anxious.
Yeah, I just had a sense that I should try to stock up on things that I might need and hopefully not have to go out as much once this officially starts.
Shoppers were only let in a few at a time to keep that six-foot distance. Many waited to get in, including Jane Andrews and her husband, who came right after hearing the news about the stay-at-home order.
Not knowing what we would find when we got here, but there's plenty of stuff on the shelf still. Feeling a little panicked, but overall, okay.
Jamie Poole is executive director of the Minnesota Grocers Association. Her message is simple. Please do not rush out to get groceries.
By rushing on products, what that does is make sure that there's not products left for your neighbors. And we're much more Minnesota nice than that. Want to make sure that we keep those products on the shelves, that you kind of stick to what your household needs.
Now, it might take all of us a little time to figure out the new lay of the land over the next 2 weeks. And some people, like Chanel Moore, who works at Edible Arrangements, is wondering if she'll be working after Friday.
I mean, I know they're trying to stop the virus and all, but I'm just glad when all this is over with so people can get back to their regular lives.
Carrie Anderson is a nurse and says she is glad to see the new restrictions in place.
We don't know if we're going to be quarantined at the hospital or how bad it's really going to get.
Susie Jones, News Talk 830 WCCO.
And for those who are wondering, yes, liquor stores will remain open. No need to rush to the liquor store either. 613 News Talk 830 WCCO, a rarity these days, 2 days in a row for big gains on Wall Street. The Vikings add a receiver. That's coming up in sports also. Some troubling news from Carl Anthony Towns. It makes this COVID-19 case hit a little more close to home. And we meet a family trying to cope with the new sheltered reality. It's all coming up on Minnesota's Drive Time News. Stay with us.
Here's your forecast on News Talk 830 WCCO.
Rain falling in the metro area, also some fog and mist as well. That continues. We'll drop down to 31 tonight. 20% chance of rain tomorrow afternoon. Cloudy and a high of 45. Right now, 40. News Talk 830 WCCO.
On Minnesota's Drive Time News.
Well, tough news for Timberwolves star Carl Anthony Towns, whose mother is in a medically induced coma after suffering serious complications because of COVID-19. Both Towns' parents were infected. Towns using his Instagram account last night to encourage people to continue their social distancing.
Please don't be in places with a lot of people. As high as your chances of getting this disease, and this disease is not. It's deadly. It's deadly. And, we're going to keep fighting on my side, me and my family. We're going to keep fighting this.
Yeah, wishing the best for Towns' mom. His dad is back home, still in quarantine. The Minnesota Vikings making a couple of roster moves today, adding a veteran wide receiver.
Tennessee looking for the lead. Tannehill, darts it back to the end zone.
Tajay Sharp will compete for that wide receiver 2 spot. Sharp caught 25 passes for 329 yards and a career-high 4 touchdowns for the Titans last year. The Vikings today also signing defensive lineman Anthony Zettel. 620 now on News Talk 830 WCCO. Tonight's business news is sponsored by R.W. Baird. Here's Bloomberg's Mona Rivera.
For the first time in more than a month, stocks had 2 up days back-to-back. The Dow gained nearly 500 points, or more than 2%. The S&P added 28 points, more than 1%. Only the NASDAQ turned negative, ending a fraction lower. Investors are counting on that $2 trillion stimulus measure to contain the fallout from the coronavirus. A big pullback from people wanting to sell their homes. The Mortgage Bankers Association reports that mortgage applications plunged more than 29% last week. Open houses and showings have been canceled, as well as many closings. Target is rolling back its plans to remodel stores and open new ones. It will also push back plans to incorporate fresh food and alcohol in its online pickup service. Target says it's dealing with rising costs, including paying workers more. AT&T and Verizon have announced they're easing up on data rules to keep people connected. With the Bloomberg Business Update, I'm Mona Rivera on News Talk 830 WCCO.
6:21 in Minnesota's Drive Time News. Time for our Newsmakers segment. Well, families all over the state are figuring out how to be together 24/7 these days. WCCO's Laura Oakes sat down 6 feet apart with the Anderson Malloy household in Falcon Heights to see how it's going.
It's boring.
That's 12-year-old Henry Malloy, who's had enough already. He finished all of his online schoolwork in an hour, had his basketball season canceled, and baseball tryouts put on hold, though he's trying to make the best of that one.
I have to play catch with my neighbor over the fence. I can't go near him.
So their mom texts me and says, can Henry meet in the backyard, and you guys play catch over the fence with gloves on.
Mom Sheridan has her hands full, to say the least. She and her husband Jim have 4 kids, ranging in age from 12 to 18. The 12, 14, and 17-year-old in the house, climbing the walls, trying to do online school and make sense of all this in their own ways. And Sheridan, well, she's in school too, grad school, which she deliberately decided to not take online but is now forced to.
Before, you know, we got the kid, I always would schedule my classes to be starting after the kids left for school, and now the kids are home and I still have my classes on Zoom. And a lot of classes are still 3 hours long.
3 hours that now need to be shared with kids who used to be at school, like 14-year-old Nora, who is most disappointed that her driver's ed class got canceled and she can't see her friends right now.
And how are you staying in touch with your friends?
On FaceTime and, like, texting and, like, Snap or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Does it kind of feel like everybody's in the same boat?
Yeah, basically. Except some people, like, don't. Are not listening to the rules. Like a lot of kids are just hanging out with people, or like, especially in large groups, doing whatever, even though you're not supposed to be doing that.
And for 17-year-old Monica, she's missing out on those precious final weeks of high school, not knowing if there will be a senior prom or even a graduation ceremony. And for a mature, sensible girl who likes answers, this isn't exactly working for her.
I mean, I guess it's kind of like hard because it's so, like, up in the air right now. Like, we don't really know anything. And the other part that's really hard for me is, like, not that I want to know anyone that has coronavirus, but, like, it's not, like, something that's really affected me directly. So it's kind of hard to, like, want to go hang out with my friends or, like, understand this whole thing that everything's getting shut down when, like, it feels like it's, like, so, like, not related to me or anyone that I know, which, I mean, I guess it will be eventually, but it's just, that's what's hard right now, I guess, so.
Monica's stepdad, Jim, is working from home during all of this, too, and looking out for his own parents who are in the older age group that is particularly at risk for coronavirus. He says his dad, a former cop who is all about safety, has taken no chances.
And so he was like, well, sure, you guys can come over, but we have to scan you and check, and you have to stay far away. So he, as soon as we came in the door, he scanned our foreheads with the thermometer and checked and then rechecked to make sure that it was accurate. But he does it sometimes to be kind of funny, but he's also kind of, I think it's nerve-wracking for people that are, I mean, almost 70 years old to kind of think about that.
Jim and Sheridan are helping both sets of their parents navigate disappointments too, like not being able to retire this year as they had planned and watching their investments tank, and not being able to allow those precious connections with their grandkids that they may need most right now.
It's like, oh, you've got all these kids home, like, and they don't have any sports or anything like that. I'll do something with them, or they can come to my house and we can do this. But even though the willingness to help is there, like, we're kind of like, and I mean, Jim's brother finally said, you know, like, the kids go to school and interact with all these kids. It doesn't make sense for them to expose you to whatever they've been exposed to. And I think that is kind of heartbreaking for our parents, especially just because we're all home with all of our kids. We're going crazy and they can't help us.
And on top of all this, Jim and Sheridan and the kids are moving into a new house next month, if, of course, everything stays on track. In the meantime, family time has a whole new meaning for them, one that everyone is adjusting to, laughing about, and hoping will return to some sense of normalcy sooner than later. Laura Oakes, News Talk 830 WCCO.
Changes for the Anderson Malloy family. Changes for a lot of our families. Good perspective there tonight. Well, students at Totino Grace got their first taste of online school today. Principal Sherry Broadhead telling Dave Lee on the WCCO Morning News that some students were hesitant about online school, but most excited to get into it.
They're used to being with their teachers, and, you know, I think for Totino Grace, that's one of the things that we're best at is our relationships with our students. And so I think they miss their teachers. They miss seeing them, and they want to connect with each other.
Students had four classes today and tomorrow. Teachers are going to reassess what worked and what didn't work Friday over the weekend. And then classes will resume on Monday. Well, Senator Amy Klobuchar's husband continues to battle COVID-19. John Bessler remains hospitalized in Washington, D.C. Fellow Minnesota Senator Tina Smith says he is doing well considering the circumstances.
Well, when I spoke with Amy earlier this morning, she says he's still in the hospital, but he is sleeping better, and he is, I think she wouldn't mind me saying that he's really irritated, which I think is a good sign because, you know, that means he's working hard to get better. But he's been pretty sick.
Senator Smith was a guest of WCCO's Chad Hartman today. Klobuchar says Bessler became sick 2 weeks ago after they'd last seen each other, so she is not being forced to self-quarantine. 6:28 on Minnesota's Drive Time News. That'll wrap it up for this Wednesday, March 25th, 2020. News obviously changing very fast with the pandemic. Keep it here on WCCO Radio for the very latest. If you missed this newscast, any part of the broadcast day, just go to the rewind function on our radio.com app. Lots of helpful info as well at WCCORadio.com. Especially we have the governor's stay-at-home order up online. Shows you what essential businesses will remain open. Valuable stuff there. I'm Adam Carter. Thanks for listening. More coming up on News Talk 830 WCCO.